Well, this is channel one right. I'm using this reel all over again. Somehow or other, it didn't take before. This is channel one right, and I'm setting it up for a little visit with Rick and Suzanne at lunch. It's about 11:45 now, this Tuesday, the 14th of September, 71. The talk yesterday didn't take. So I'm just starting all over again on this reel. This is channel one right, and for a visit with Rick and Suzanne. Suzanne came back from Texas yesterday, and Rick's been up a couple of days, and we just worked the cattle, test for pregnancy and vaccinated the heifers this Tuesday, the 14th of September, 71. See, now this is channel one right. And I'm setting it up for the visit with Rick and Suzanne at noon, at lunch, the Tuesday, the 14th of September, 71. Channel one right.
Mm-hmm. And it's all hooked up machines. And you just sit there and watch. And one machine takes care of one thing, and the next machine takes care of the next. And they'll bake 200-300 loaves at once. Pull them out, slice them. And they have them on the cooling racks. And it smells good, but it just isn't that touch. In the bakery.
Living all over for my coffee. In Miami?
Mm-hmm.
Is that all you know of Miami?
About all I've been for any length of time.
Do they still have little bakeries?
Well, they have little pastry shops. Same thing you've got in town here.
And they have bread too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Make it up here.
Do we have some in Gainesville?
Yeah. We got one down at the mall.
From where?
The mall.
Did you know that, Faye?
Yeah. And there's one there on University, that's Jim Danny. They bake their bread.
Yeah. And they make all kinds. Monkey bread, potato bread.
Well, not known that. I just figured it's all gone.
Well, there's a few. They do a lot of specialty work now, you know, wedding cakes, things like that.
Yeah.
Bread is just kind of a sideline, I guess.
Yeah, mostly
just,
a pastry shop.
Just keeping it up, you know.
Yeah.
And it'll probably fade out. But you know, I was in the store. When I was in Miami last week, I was working in this Cuban store. And I had one guy, and all he did all day was make Cuban bread.
Yeah.
And he'd have these down. He'd go back in the stockroom, and he'd have these big cabinets, wooden doors on it. He opened up, and he's got these big long rolls, the dough rising, see. And he's got himself a big oven out there, and he'd just bring them out and put them in, and bake them, pull them out, and put them in a bag, and set them on top of the oven. People come by and take them. And that bread, I guess, is about the same as their rice. You know, you always have that bread and you always have that rice.
Well, now, could you get some of that if you go down there?
Oh, yeah.
Take it home?
I was going to buy some and take it home. See, I'm trying to learn how to cook that food. I like that. I really like that food. But I just never got around to it. Those big, big, long loaves, you know, and they cut it up and slice it and make sandwiches out of it. And it's kind of a dry bread, you know. A lot of crumbs, crusty, kind of hard. That's how they like it. It's not a real solid bread. It's like full of air.
Oh, it is. Like French bread?
Yeah. It looks like French bread, but it's not.
It doesn't taste the same.
No, it's more crusty, more dry. You know, French bread is pretty solid. You know, there's a lot of bread. This has got a lot of, you know, air pockets and stuff in it. Not as doughy.
Well, now you see, so far I've got no categories to work on. So I just picked up the bread. Now I'm working on that now. Your family has. Don't have it. They're not much interested in that.
In the Cuban food, no. See, they're kind of alienated against Cubans. a lot of the older people are, because, well, they do better in business than most Americans do. You know, they come over and just take over. Oh, they work. Because they'll be pulling welfare on the side, see. And they'll be making a lot of money in the business, too. And that makes people mad.
Yeah, I know.
And, not speaking the language irritates them. It doesn't bother me. They speak Spanish. It's, you know, it's your language. Speak what you want. But it irritates a lot of people when I hear them speak Spanish.
Irritates your papa, your daddy, and your mama? Both of them?
They stand it, but they'll get mad every now and then. You know, say, well, why don't you speak our language?
Oh, you mean tell them?
Well, you know, don't tell them, but they just mumble it. Not, you know, mumble it to me. Why don't they speak our language or something?
Yeah, why can't they stay in their own neighborhood?
Yeah.
Does your family eat like we do? Just uninteresting things?
I don't know. I don't think I have paid any attention to how they think about the food.
Just turn that over there. You don't have to rattle it.
My mom will try a new dish now and then, but most of the time it's, you know, you've had it before. I don't ever tell her that, though.
You
don't want to make her mad. I have to eat there, you know. And I don't want to cook the food. It's too easy to just go in, sit down, and eat.
You're not going out to dinner when you go home, are you?
No, but you gotta appreciate that she's cooking.
I appreciate it, yeah.
My cousin likes to cook. We carried some of his stuff home from Fort Worth. He had half a dozen cookbooks, specialty cookbooks, along with three or four regular kinds. He sets up an apartment and he cooks. All these special dishes, and then has his dates over for dinner.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He cooks. His dad is a big man in Gulf Oil, and they used to live out in Southeast Asia for a long time. And he's real, my grandmother says, he's real cosmopolitan. Cindy says he's cool. He thinks that's neat. He cooks for a date. Picks up a real fancy dinner.
What's fancy?
What's fancy? Well, Galloping Gourmet type dishes. He'll fix dish Chinese and Korean dishes. I've never eaten over there, but it's the kind of thing that uses everything in the kitchen three or four times. And souffles and things like that. That take a lot of time, take some skill.
But do you cook any? Clear the table, please. Do you cook any Galloping Gourmet things?
Well, every once in a while, Jim and I will decide we're going to have something kind of special. But I don't much like cooking. And every time I try something new, Jim says, why don't you try something new? And I say, okay, what's new with hamburger meat? What's new with chicken? Well, chicken's okay. But the last thing we tried was kind of like a shepherd's pie, only you make it with cornmeal instead. A biscuit pie. And it came out about a half inch of meat and about 4 inches of cornmeal. Which, when you begin to eat, it's just kind of, blah. You say, well, let's not try that one again.
Jim is better cook than you are.
He's pretty good. He tries more things.
You aren't much of a cook.
I'm not interested in it. And I'm not very good at it either. When we try something new, he likes to help, like shrimp creole. That's a joint effort. When we made our pepper relish, that was a joint effort. He's in there supervising, making sure I do everything right.
I think all that interesting food is misplaced. It's, you just ought to eat to live, wholesome food.
Like bread. But you know, I was thinking I could easily go to a bakery and buy that potato bread. But it wouldn't be the same, I don't think. What Libby and I did, and just together picking out a loaf of bread that we'd like for lunch, and just sitting there with Dick gone and the two girls playing someplace there by ourselves eating bread. Because it's not just the bread, but that's good.
Am I getting any help talking? If it was Miss Daisy, we'd be talking.
Mm-hmm.
The way it is, you see, we stopped. She'd talk around, and I could pick up a cue from what she said, and away we'd go.
Mm-hmm. She'd say,
but I got no cues. I have no cues, no leads.
I'm thinking. I needed to go home to recuperate. That was a joke of the century. I had not been there 2 days before I knew that was a mistake.
Is that right?
Oh, gosh, yeah. Cindy was in school. She'd just gone to school. They'd driven her up there Sunday night and take all her stuff and put it in the dorm room. Well, that's when Daddy made the discovery that in the next wing of Cindy's building, there were girls' rooms and boys' rooms right next to each other. He also made the astounding discovery that about half the students there are Negroes. And in fact, Cindy's three suite mates are Negroes. That was occasion for another outburst. And on top of that, he got stuck in the driveway. It's a little tiny sidewalk that they let cars drive up to unload, and it has a little circle. And at one end, before you make the circle, there's a little space where you could back up into it when you're turning. Well, that was filled. Somebody was parked there. So Daddy spent a half an hour trying to get out of this, back out the driveway. Well, when my father, when he gets on to a subject, It can go on for an hour at least. And of course he had fuel. He had the boys and girls next to each other, the blacks, the visitation. He found out that boys can come up and visit in Cindy's dorm from 5 to 2 on Fridays and Saturdays. And this was terrible. And Mama said, she said, this went on the whole time. He's trying to back out of this. And it took him a half an hour. It just gets worse and worse, you know, as he waits. It's just like the doctor out here talking about the cows being fat. Now, the first one, she's pretty fat. The next one is each cow, they get fatter and fatter. Worse and worse. That's what my father does. Worse and worse.
And how did that do?
Oh, he started out and he said, the first cow, he said, she's too fat. She's got to lose 150 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the next one that came up there was too fat, too. Well, this time, the young man was entering into the spirit of the next time, there's too fat to go to market. And this poor old 24 got up there. He said, now, don't you eat any McDonald's hamburgers for the next couple of weeks because she's going to market. And the young man... One of them ran up there, and he said, done. That one's bad enough. You can get enough towel off that one to grease both pairs of shoes. pretty soon they had to lose 200 pounds. And I expect if he went on, it'd be about 300 that they had to lose. They had just too fat. Fat getting up in the pelvic area.
Yeah.
He's too fat. He couldn't even get his hand up there. You know, he said he couldn't get his hand up there. They're so fat. And they just got fatter and fatter. He stopped. He got one.
Yeah.
He kept saying that heifer's going to have a cesarean. She doesn't lose some weight, she's going to have a cesarean. He's going to have trouble with that cow.
Thank you.
They got real ticklish. I could hear it, just each cow. It's fatter and fatter.
That's as near cussing as I ever heard him. And then he got to thinking about the pasture. And then he said, what you need is a palmetto.
Yeah, you need to put them in a palmetto pasture.
And he said, and don't feed them a grain all winter. He looked over that hay when he was down there and he said, and give that hay away. I said, Doc, I'm not going to let you look at the horses. He says, I know what they look like already. Everything out here is too fat, he said.
I didn't hear what he said about the rye. Something about that was feeding them, too.
Oh, yes. He said, yes, they had too much feed. I said, they haven't had any feed unless they had a rye last winter. If you call that feed. Yes, he said, of course it is feed. You know. It's better than bought feed. It's better than grain. Because they can fill up on rye and grain, you know. They just get a little handout if they got any at all.
He came up to me and he said, I bet you take them from one pasture to the other. Oh, shit.
And I, after 2 days, they got on to you?
They didn't get on to me. I found, you know, I know that. I knew that before I went there. I can do almost anything. And it's not going to bother them. Cindy says I'm the do-gooder of the family. I'm held up as an example to the other two children. It's a terrible position.
Oh, yes.
You have a lot of fun in that position.
Anyway, no, what happened, you see, they talk about, Mom would talk about Cindy. We were alone most of the time. She'd tell me all her worries about Cindy. And Daddy'd come home and tell me all his worries about the finances, about his job, and about paying for the car repairs, and about this and about that. Cindy would get hold of me. She'd tell me all about her problems with boys, and whether about making girlfriends, and about Mom and Daddy, and the only person I didn't get a lot of problems from was my brother, and I only saw him for about 3 or 4 hours in a big crowd.
What happened? Why, how did you miss him?
Well, we went to Fort Worth to see my grandfather, and they came by Friday night and stayed about an hour. And Saturday, they took us sailing. You don't do much talking when you're sailing, because I had this suspicion they were trying to get rid of me.
And the boom set.
Because they're pretty nice. It's one of these kind of, the boat is not real big, but it's real slick on the top, especially when it's wet. Well, when they took my mother sailing, she was sitting on what they call a box, which is right at the front. And you don't have a strap to stick your feet under, you know, to hold yourself in. All you have is this little rope and the mast. Well, Doug turned the corner real fast, and Mama just kind of shoomp, just slid right off the boat, you know, landed on her seat and just sank. Well, it shook Doug up, and he grounded himself and messed up the centerboard. You know, here was Mama. She got the giggles when she's in the water. She couldn't get back on the boat. There she was floundering around the water, and Doug was scared to death. He thought he'd done it on purpose.
You want to sit up instead of back.
Anyway, so when I went sailing, they put these little strips of rough tape on the boat, places where you sit. So you got a little more to hang on to, but not much. And we just go zipping along there. And I'd see Doug, you know, and he'd kind of watch and try to catch me when I wasn't watching, and he'd, you know, kind of swoop. I about fell off once. But anyway, so that's about all I got to see of him.
What's he doing?
He's working. Well, they invite us to go to Six Flags over Texas. But I thought I'd better not this time. You know, I'll just spend some time with my grandparents. So I didn't see them much.
Well, now, that sort of talk, when you're keeping up with your mama and your sister, Cindy, and your daddy, now, where does that get you?
In the bed. Well, it's kind of gloomy is what it is. Because, you know, this is a perfect example of what my father's like sometimes. I got in the car after they picked me up at the bus station. We were driving along, real heavy traffic. Mama said she was so glad that Jim and I decided not to go to Georgia. Because she worried about me up there. Not just the degree, but lifting things, working too hard, all sorts of things. And so Daddy comes out, you know, and I could just tell what sort of conversation this was going to be by the tone of voice. He says, I can't understand why B wants to leave Florida in the first place. Doesn't he have plenty of fishing to do there? I said, Daddy, B doesn't fish very often. So he couldn't understand why B would leave Florida when you have Lake Poinsett and Lake George and all the fine fishing in Florida. Nice weather. Anyway, he comes in and he says, you know what's going to happen. He says, it always happens to people. They save up their money all their life, and they have this dream, and they finally buy their land and start building their house. And about the time they get the house built, they have a heart attack. You know, I just got zapped back. Oh, well. You know. Anyway, this went on for about 30 minutes about heart attacks and, you know, putting all your money into something like that and then having a heart attack, and then you just stuck with it, and it just sits there and everything rusts away until somebody buys it for chicken feed.
He didn't leave any of it to you, my
reason. No. He went through the whole decline and fall. Whole family in debt. This goes on every once in a while. Sometimes he's real cheerful. Actually, lots of times. But so everywhere in this heavy traffic with the heart attacks going on here and there.
Oh, that was.
Yeah, real heavy traffic. You see, what he does, he can drive perfectly well by himself, but when anybody else is in the car, he needs lots of help.
Yeah.
You know, like, can I get over that lane? And of course, Mama's stuck with the job of directing, and she tells him something that's perfectly clear to him, like, you can move over now. He'll move over two lanes. You know, she means you can move over into the next lane. So he goes staring over into the second lane over, and then he finds out he's not supposed to be there. But that lane turns off the wrong way. I remember one trip this happened. We were going through Houston on our way home, and Mama put him on the wrong bridge. So he stopped the car and made Mama get in the back seat, and I got in the front seat. It was my job. And I couldn't even read maps.
And
still can.
You still can.
Well, I can, but I don't read them very well. I just mostly go by memory. If I've been someplace.
Well, that works.
If I've been there, it does.
Oh, really?
Most of the time. Like, I could find my way over to Faye's house real easy.
Just because you've been there once.
Yeah.
but
Faye's.
Yeah. In Houston.
You mean Faye?
Faye Burke.
Faye Burke?
Yeah.
Did you get over that?
Got over there at Christmas, but not this trip.
Oh, you didn't get there this
trip? No.
I thought that you just went over there.
We talked a long time. Did various interruptions.
On which end?
Hers.
Yeah.
I got so tickled here. She asked, she said, are you calling long distance? And I said, no, just a regular phone call. She said, okay, well, we can just talk this way. She said, but wait a minute, I got to get things straight here. All three children were sick with flu or something. She said they have 102 fever, and that's with medicine to keep it down. And she had them all engaged in some sort of project, you know, a little separate. I guess Patrick was asleep. I didn't hear anything out of him. Patrick is or Shannon?
Shannon.
And so I heard her off the phone a little bit. She said, now, Curtis, Elliot, Mom's going to be on the phone for a while, and I want you all just to entertain yourselves for a while. And if either one of you starts fussing, I'm going to send you to your rooms. Well, while she came back, now she got them all settled. And we talked, and every once in a while she'd have to stop and tell Curtis that he could get a sponge out of the kitchen, tell Elliot he could wash that off himself in the bathtub. At one point, Elliot came up to her and said he wanted to go downstairs and play with the other children, and she said no. It was too hot, and he was sick. So in about two sentences later, she said, wait a minute, Suzanne. He's decided he's not going to argue about it anymore. He's just going to disobey. He was going out the door downstairs. He wasn't going to fuss anymore about it. So she went and got him back. Anyway, let's see. Mm-hmm. And one time they started fussing with each other, and she told, I think it was Curtis, that he was making the trouble, and it was going to be him that had to go to his room. And that ended the trouble real quickly. Over about a 45-minute conversation, you know, we had these little interruptions here and there. I just got so tickled.
And then she just picked it up right
back. Yeah,
right
just picked it right back up. Didn't interrupt her phone.
Well, what are you all talking about? That's what I want to say. I asked Miss Daisy. You know, she had the preacher down there every certain thing. And I said to her, almost said to her, Miss Daisy, what are you all talking about? And she won't tell me.
She said, just this and that.
Just this and that.
Well, you know how she started? She said, okay, now, first thing first, she says, how about your thesis? I said, oh, no. I said, well, my thesis. I said, that's a good question. He said, well, she said, well, what are you going to do on it? She said, I never worked with a tape that much. I said, you're lucky.
That's the reason I'm in Texas now.
Oh, dear. You sure you didn't tell that? You said Faye told me you were sick, and I said, well, it wasn't quite being sick. So, let's see, the next thing was, oh, she interrupted that. We talked about that a little while, and then she remembered that she wanted me to remind Faye that something about a tape recorder that Ron had given.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, she wants it back.
Yeah.
For Ron.
Yeah, I know that.
These little things came in patches, kind of, you know, because we kind of may have one interruption in the middle of it and carry on for a while, and after the next one we'd go on to something else. But we came to the grand conclusion that I shouldn't worry about doing what I think you might want me to do. She said, you'll get in an early grave that way. I said, I know.
You know.
Well, I don't get anything much out of this, your recording. didn't you get into the governess or anything like that?
You mean with her?
Yeah.
No.
Well, she's the one that taught me about the governess.
Yeah, I thought about that. That's about kind of shape I felt. I just didn't talk about it during shape she felt.
But you'd have to transpose it a little bit.
Oh yeah. Well, it's just the fact that yeah, I tell you the reason I went down there is because I just, you know, felt like I had to take a break. But what it was, is more than that, was the fact that I had written Mama and told her that we thought we were going to Georgia and we'd have a week or two in Cocoa. And I thought, well, while Jim was there, I'll just go on out to Texas. Well, that's when we found out that we were going to Georgia, and I began to realize that it wasn't really a very good idea to go right when I went because of the tapes and all. Because I figured if I broke up working on it, then it'd be harder to get back into it. But then I got this letter from my mother, and she said, "I'm so excited you're coming." And she just got took it for granted, you know. And I could just imagine calling her and telling her I wasn't going to come. I just couldn't do it. And even though I knew I shouldn't go and didn't have time and couldn't afford it and about 50 other million reasons, I just couldn't pick up the phone and tell her I wasn't coming. Because I've seen her face when Polly tells her that, her mother tells her that. And it's just kind of utterly crushed.
You mean you just run out there to please her?
Well, yeah, in a way, that was the main reason. I mean, by the time I was getting over the sulfur and all, I was feeling pretty good, and I didn't need to go out there anymore. I didn't even feel like I wanted to. That I mean, I wanted to, but I wouldn't mind waiting quite a while. And that's when our letter came, and I just couldn't do it. So what, do you want to go out there?
Well, that's got nothing at all to do with the governor.
Yeah, I know.
Well, I think
it does.
It's precious. It's precious. Yeah. This is exactly what you're talking about. This is what I think this is too.
Special.
It's a lot heavier pressure than just feeling panicky about writing that thesis. A lot more.
You mean not just part of your mama?
Yeah.
With a kind of responsibility.
Yeah, it's just that, you see, we've always been so close, and I know that in my family, if I'm around, they just seem like they don't worry quite so much. At least they can talk to me about it, and once you can talk about something, it's not so bad for a while. And I know my mother's voice, and I can just imagine, you know, this old Susie, you know, this utter sorrow in it. And I mean, I'm not exalting my position, but they like to have me around. And of the children, it's just, they don't see me much, so that makes it even more important that I come. And I just couldn't tell I wasn't coming.
Well, do people here treat you like that?
Hmm? Well, no. I mean, I know I'm liked, but it's not quite the same as... You see, the thing is with Mom and Daddy, they're not real happy because they've got a lot of... They do worry about Cindy, and Cindy is very unfriendly toward them most of the time. Like, when we took her up to her dorm, she just kind of... You sure you want to go on with this?
I'm kind of... There's nothing, nothing like having children, is it?
No.
No, sir. No, sir. I'm telling you. Look at that. How'd you like to have that hanging around?
Thank you. But it is a matter of adjusting. It is a matter of pressure.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Isn't
I mean, it's one that I was, you know,
was it
sad? Didn't want to go home. It's just that I didn't feel like I needed to. I guess. Mm-hmm.
And so, you're torn.
I think other people enjoy their children more than the parents, do you think?
Oh, grandparents do, I think.
Yeah.
My grandparents, you know, the more grandchildren around, the better. Or used to be that way.
Parents don't have much of a chance to enjoy them. They're aggravated with them so much.
Yeah, they worry about them so much.
Yeah, I see that with my parents. So they've got grandchildren now. Oh, that's the light of their life.
Oh, they do have.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, you know, it's just go up there and enjoy those kids, and then you can go home when they're gone, see. You don't have to worry about them anymore.
Yeah.
And it's just always a pleasure. And they're just as typical as grandparents can be, because every time they go up, well, let's go out and get him a toy. Let's just get him a little something to take out. I'm going, what are you all doing? What are you always taking him stuff for, you know? Well, we just thought we'd get him. He said, uh-huh, your grandparents, that's what it is. And they just look at me like, ma. And they just love those kids.
That ought to take some of the pressure off of you.
Yeah, except they look at me like, well, why can't you be like that?
Yeah, why can't you let us have some grandchildren?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Why do we have to bother about you?
Yeah, so.
Well, now, what was it, say? Ronald. Say is Ronald. He was expected on from several quarters to hire out this summer. He couldn't go to school?
No, no school.
But he decided he wouldn't hire out and just come on home and knock around a while.
And here was a man with three children, three boys, and a wife, and on a shoestring at Rice Graduate School in architecture. No job, no prospect of a job.
Mm-hmm.
And they decided that they would just take the summer off and create, look around, explore. And it is just unheard of.
Oh, yeah.
In his family.
His family?
And Faye's family, it wasn't. They went along with it.
Yeah, but they've had a right smart education.
Yeah, they went along with it. This is fine. So Faye and Ronald and the three children came home to Knoxville. Own mother, Fanny. And the interesting thing about this was that Ronald went first day or two he was there. Francis took him on a little tour in the yard and showed him gutters that needed to be cleaned out and walks that needed to be done and a few things around the house that he could do at his leisure. He went in and he said to Faye, well, now, Faye, this is not exactly what I had in mind for the summer. And so Faye came to her mother and said, Mama, this is not exactly what Ronald had in mind for the summer, clean gutters. And so her mama said, well, now, Faye, it isn't exactly my idea of a summer to babysit your three children. And this has to be done, and I have to pay for it. Now, it doesn't take much time, but I think we can work out something. A little bit of it, you know. When he feels like it, won't hurt him. And they cleared the air, and he cleaned gutters every once in a while. But he felt it worked out fine.
Mm-hmm.
but it took a good bit of nerve. Now, he could have had a job being bag boy in one of the grocery stores out there. And he said, yeah, he said, this is a waste of time.
Yeah.
And my family agreed that it was a waste of time. But he could do better.
Well, anyhow, what I, that's all part of it. But just the idea that he'd take off a couple of months just to get his breath. Now, you see, when Finn and I came up, that was assumed that that's what you do. If anything, the pressure was not to take a fool job, waste your time. There's plenty of time for that.
Mm-hmm.
Take off, just not run. So really, that's you see how things have changed?
Yes. Oh, yes.
Suzanne has heard me say that my father, I almost took a job teaching school,
mm-hmm.
and my father said, if you won't do that, I'll pay you what they pay you up there. That's
yeah.
foolish.
Yeah.
Now, you see, let me tell you, you see, they haven't made the point, and I hate to have to make it, but you see, I can't find anybody, you see, with free time. They all have to work around full employment.
Mm-hmm.
And steady. And no matter what age up there, just clear on through. So, you see, you don't have access to anybody. You see, while they're up to that in the campus, the degree stands in the way of them learning anything,
yeah.
you know, well, at least working with it. And when they're not there, it's that idea full of fun. And it's not necessarily their idea, but everybody they're in contact with, including their friends. I say. Am I not right?
I think it is.
Same thing Green was saying yesterday.
Did he say that?
Yeah, English majors just don't know what to do with them to get them jobs. Same thing.
Well, how do you see it?
Well, I'm faced with, I don't know if Jim told you all this. I thought I was going to be free of that little bit, but they gave me another assistantship. It's really... I can turn it down, but I can just hear the reverberations throughout, you know, just everybody, Jim, my parents and his parents. And
well, you know what's happened up there. They have 30 slots. 30 sections is unaccounted for.
Yeah. That's why. Mama thought this was a real big deal, and it just proved how good I was.
Yeah.
I said, Mom, they just don't have enough teachers.
Yeah.
Where is
it? It proves how desperate they are.
Yeah. She thought, oh, God.
And what they do, they hire you when they need you, and then they drop you when they don't. So there's nothing much about it. But now that idea of having a little now you see Rick, you I always say what's said and Sal said. You see what they're faced with. Now, I'll put it this way. Rick goes back down there and takes a job. As far as Radcliffe goes, he'll never get any further.
Well, it's just, to me, it's whether you've got the guts to say that to everybody, no, you're not going to work. You know, and then that's what they do, to say, well, that's just being lazy. How are you going to convince them that?
Yeah, they
Something else could be more important. My father gets on this thing, and this is one of his talks. He says he found out Jim had the job at Lum's. Well, he thought the reason Jim had a job there is because he couldn't find any jobs in forestry, and he wasn't going back to school. In other words, he'd just be like all these engineers who are out of work and find menial jobs. Well, as Daddy sees it, menial. He says all that intelligence going to waste. So, as far as he's concerned, my intelligence, after going to school, I should get a high-paying job, as high-paying as I can get, say, as a teacher or something. For me to take, say, a part-time job that requires very little thought, but, say, would open up something else, you know, like working at the truck stop or something like that, or just give me time to do something else, that to him is a waste. If you've got a degree, then you shouldn't have a job fitting that degree. You know, you shouldn't take anything less, because you're just wasting this.
That's that all along the line.
That's the same thing I ran into. When I went home, I wasn't particular about it. I'd be a busboy. I'd be fine. No, I wasn't.
You were just looking.
You know, I wasn't ready to start a career and get my name plate on a door. And my dad says, well, now you've got an education, you shouldn't be making less than $150 a week. And I just went, well, I hadn't thought about it like that. And it's when you interview for a job, they say, what did you study? English literature. And what did you study that for? I go, well, I liked it. I just look at you real peculiar like. I just smile and say, well, it's a lot of pressure. They can really put the screws to you because they got that economic power that I don't have.
Yeah.
See, and they just start slapping your face. So how are you going to buy food? Where are you going to live? You know? And I go, well, that'll work out.
I tell you, that pressure is excessive.
Yeah.
You know, I told you how I felt yesterday in the office.
Mm-hmm.
I hadn't been up in that office space for several weeks. And I walked up there with Rick. I just wanted to speak to the new department head. And I haven't seen him. We had to sit there in the office for about a quarter of an hour.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just saw those important people coming and going. And there I was sitting back there, just taking my time for a little interview. I just wanted to talk to him for a minute. And, you know, I felt the greatest urgency just to frame the words in my mind, what I'd say to him, and be sure that they were in the proper role and what he expected. And it'd be unexceptionable. And nothing that he'd remember.
And that he could always, and you could always be predictable.
Yeah, I felt it strongly.
Sure.
And told him so.
You know something I found, especially among parents that have been through the Depression, is it really marked them. Mm-hmm. I know it marked my parents. And then they just say, how, you know, you save your money, but you just don't treat it right. And I go, well, now I haven't been through a depression like you all, you know. And I'm not gonna take that fear. And
that's right.
It just really marks some people.
Yeah, do you want to do it too? I want to do it. It didn't mark me.
I suppose you meet people that had to, well, they just didn't know if they'd make it or not. I mean, it was just every penny, just fighting him. Once they get out of it, see, they don't want to be there again. It's like my mom can't understand why I want to be thin. She says, you ought to be heavy, you know, get some weight on you. And see, that was the mark of a man, a little weight on him. Well, I don't want to be thin. I mean fat. I don't feel good when I'm fat. I want to be thin.
As he is. Solid. Yeah.
He moves right, doesn't he?
Yeah.
She's put a little bit on you. I go, no. You take a little off you. And she gets mad when I say that, because she's always, you know, going on a diet. And I'm always chiding her about, I bet you I weigh less than you. And I say, oh, that makes her mad.
Well, now, how's it going to work out? Faye keeps chiding me. She says, now, don't you tell him what to do. And don't you tell him what sort of job to take. I couldn't tell you. I don't know.
Well, the way it worked out is, it just works out. It's like I could have taken that job, but something kept saying, you just better not. So I didn't do it. I was right to. I just know it was.
The one thing I have learned long ago, not to meddle with, you see, is what people do. And also their attitude towards their parents. I always take a position of doubt, but it comes back in the long run where I actually take the point of view of the parents, that I'd hate to have to deal with you. So I reinforce the parents.
Uh-huh.
I mean, do I tear down your parents?
No.
What I'd like to see a fella be able to do is to do what, you know, you've got to keep your feet on the ground. You can't go off on cloud nine. That's what your parents are afraid of.
Mm.
And you got to have some, you know, you've got to have one foot on the ground at least, but be able to look at what you do.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but you can't look at it. See, that's what's against the rule. Now, let me tell you, Suzanne, you've heard Nick talk, and you heard that little tape of his inquiry about the countryside handling of horses.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the finest things I've ever seen. And it's the sort of thing that, in my estimation, now you see, I don't tell you what to do, you know that. She works with us, she knows.
Well, he's going to say,
I just make these statements, but I'm not, what is it? Pedantic. What is it? Pompous. Because I don't know. But this information, see, she picked up from her sister and her mama and all like that. I don't know, that sort of family talk doesn't get you anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
It's not information.
Yes.
It's just pure unadulterated worry.
Worry. Well, you see, you do that. That's it. And I think it's lucky that they have Suzanne to talk to.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not what I'm talking about. I don't think it is. I think, I see, you know, you don't know. The way it works out in the books, you see, and you see in Rawlins and things like that. But that little tape of Nick's seems to me to be a sort of in the right direction. You see, he carried that in his mind, that whole fall. And it was a delightful subject, you see. He liked horses, and he liked the horse people. I like horses, but I don't give a damn about the horse people or the cow people. See, he's actually in better shape than I am, but I shouldn't have put that in. But it's, you see, it's prolonged. It's sustained.
Mm-hmm.
I think it ought to be some sort of sustained view. But it'll take half of every day to do it. Now, you see, how does that...
Well, full employment, you don't have half a day every day to do it.
Yeah.
You can make your mind that, well, okay, you're going to look at things, but pretty soon, you know, you've got to fix supper and you got to work, and then it takes you a while to get home and to settle down and get yourself together, and it just doesn't work. I don't know. It might with an exceptional person out there. Every day run the mill person, not... then you're gonna do it.
And then you say, all right,
I take supper off and through.
All right, I'll just work a little bit, and then I'll take a look at things. Where is that going to? You always ask the question, and they always say, now what's that going to lead? What's that going to get me? You always ask that question. I've got a half a day to look.
Yeah, well, that's a trait in you, you see, mm-hmm. that they all have. Well, now, you look at me. I'm closer to Riley than you think. I don't make a living hardly. Just barely make a living. And I used to run this ranch with the hopes of paying off a mortgage. But I let it all go now. And I lose cows. I put other things ahead of it. I can live around the cows. Or I can live around you all. Or things like that.
Hmm.
Well, it's costly. This last year, what they paid me up there, I spent. I had another income of $3,100. Faye had a little income last fall. She didn't work much. She's been helping me mostly since Christmas. And this summer she hadn't done anything. And she sort of underwrote Suzanne so she could do a little this summer. That's small, but it's just a little. And I went into my savings account, $1,000, to tide me over till I get a little money from the university again. So you see, you got to live. I'd say these little tapes that I've made since Christmas have cost me $15,000. And all my time.
Hmm.
Which doesn't allow you time to build up security and pensions, insurance.
And the businessman will say, all right, so I have to pick it up. You see, that's where they get you, to pressurize you. You'll have to be taken care of when you need it, so,
Well, now let me tell you. I never go into this, actually. I never did this before. But you see, the basis of sorrow is economics. And if you don't feel that, you ought to let sorrow go. You can state it very simply. He found that he could write articles for the magazine and they'd take them. But they're the sort of things he wasn't interested in. And if he wrote what he was interested in, it wouldn't take them.
Yeah.
He had somehow to work out a system of economics where he could survive. Well, you say, they say, he didn't have a family. Well, that's part of it, you see. And I think it's great, I think it's a great mistake, you see. The medieval church actually survived through the monastic movement, where they took Christ as a bride, and the church, you see, was their whole life. Nothing counted except that. Well, I had a strong touch of that all along, somehow or other, in my undergraduate days, even back then, and a great deal after that. You know, I make fun of that summer I spent with the Catholic priest in Fordham reading medieval Latin. That was, as by as far as I got. And that's what that was. It was sort of that monastic view. That's what attracted me, actually. The hunting bishops, I wasn't much interested in. So, I don't know.
Well, okay. you need some sort of buffer against the pressures. I mean, you know, there are, even if you cut your necessities and just kind of decide what you want and say you're going to just ignore all these other things that people want you to want.
Yes.
And that's a lot of it. You grow up thinking, well, you're supposed to have a real nice house with everything matching in each room, all the furniture matching and color scheme and, you know, just all these nice things that you get with money. So you have to decide, well, okay, you don't want that. That you'll settle for just a little bit, just a cubicle to ride in. But you've got to have some way of still, you know, having your food and all, but also some way of keeping people off your back.
Yeah.
Which, as I see it in most cases, means some sort of concession.
Most parents, and I remember Havens, a friend of ours, most parents fear for their children, the communes, you know, and the various ways that the students react and try to do what he's going to
do.
And they fear the various ways, as I say, that young people have repudiated material things. It's not safe in mind. A friend of ours just had a son whose son just got his PhD. Just packed his knapsack and left him a note and said he'd be gone a year, at least. They taught him to inquire and to look, and that's what he was going to do. And they knew they had taught him that.
But he doesn't know how to look.
But that's the thing. The idea is fine, just so you know what you
no,
into.
But,
you know what you're looking for.
Well, parents always worry that you're going to get hurt.
Yeah.
You know,
you don't really know what you're getting into.
Yeah.
This
you're still 5 years old.
Yeah, it's like they've oftentimes said to me, I said, well, I'll probably go and see Dr. Miles. So, well, you think that's a good influence in your life?
Yeah.
And I want to say, well, that's the only worthwhile thing I've run into in a long time. And their concern is, well, now,
he'll talk you into
you're off our health insurance policy now. So the first thing I'd do when I got home in summer was take out health insurance.
Yeah, man, the first thing I got, when I got home, Mama said, y'all aren't going to have student insurance anymore, are you? And I said, no, I don't think so. She said, well, y'all better get something.
Well, with hospital rooms, $90 a day or something like that, you can't.
You have to.
You have to.
I mean, yeah, I have to face it. There are places that they've got you.
Sure.
If you don't have your health.
The end of Channel 1 Right and a continuation of the visit with Rick and Suzanne this Tuesday at lunch, the 14th of September, 71, after we worked the kettle and made a steer out of the coal. Channel 1, end of Channel 1 Right and a continuation of the visit with Rick and Suzanne this Tuesday at lunch, the 14th of September, 71. Channel 1 Right, the end of Channel 1 Right, and a continuation of the visit with Suzanne and Rick this Tuesday at lunch, the 14th of September, 71.